Welcome, welcome, welcome. It's 11:59, it's nearly time for your lunch, it's Friday, it's time for the Scottish Watches podcast.
And how are you doing today, Rick?
It has been a bit of a slog today. I have been dealing with one of the large mobile phone operators for about 4 hours a day, and they're all a nightmare. So, yes, it's been one of those days of endlessly hanging on phones and trying to get people to understand and do the job that they're supposed to do. But other than that, it's a delight.
Vodafone.
Other than that, I'm fine. Other than that, they're fine. And I'm fine.
Good, good.
Well, there we go.
How's your central heating these days?
Oh, that's the more exciting news. Yes, I have heat as of yesterday. It's only taking 2 weeks. As of yesterday, I can turn off the fan heaters and portable radiators and have a fully functioning boiler back in operation. So yes, as the snow is continuing to fall where I live, I actually now have hot water and the ability not to be sitting watching the television under a blanket.
Sounds good to me.
What about yourself?
Well, this week I've been out and about, been a busy boy. I have been speaking to a lot of people in the watch game, from enthusiasts to people that are listening to the podcast, people that are using the website, and I've also been recording a couple of interviews. One, obviously, that went out in a previous edition there with Simon Porter, one that's coming up soon, and arranging some bits and pieces for further down the line as well. So it's been mobbed this week, plus the day job. So it's been good. It's a shame the weather's been crap, but I'm glad to see your cockles are now warm again.
And without revealing who your interviews have been with, I can exclusively reveal that we got our first free stuff. And let's face it, the reason why we started this was to get free stuff.
We got some gear.
Oh, that's right. We have to now tell people when we're being given free stuff, do we not? Is that not the rules?
Oh, is that what it is? Right,
yeah.
Okay. Tell us a bit more about that.
So that's our first news of this week. It has started to feed through, and I've heard some coverage of it. But basically, the Advertising Standards Authority in the UK have made an agreement with certain high-profile online influencers, which is just a terrible phrase, and has got them to agree that from now on, if they're, for example, posting on Instagram a product that they're also getting money from, they have to fess up and say they're getting money from it. Now, this is
right,
only...
Okay. So the term influencer to me would be someone that leads you astray. Like if you're being influenced to do something, that person at school is influencing my son.
It's a strange word that has been coined or adopted for what these people do. But basically it's saying that if you're an influencer and you've been gifted an item from brands, then you must mark the Instagram post as an ad. It's a kind of agreement they've made with some of the top guys and girls, but this would appear to be the start of a campaign from advertising authorities in the UK and no doubt elsewhere in the world that will start to establish who is actually reporting independently and who is actually getting paid for it, and that will eventually impact the watch world in terms of YouTube channels, podcasts and blogs, etc. So we will tell you next week who we got free stuff from, but it was only a hat, to be fair.
I was going to say, we can tell the monetary value was probably about £5.
That's fine.
So, yeah. Does this mean that if Hodinkee comes to the UK, they're going to have to tell us how much AP's paid them?
I'm not sure how actually this will work, because the only point of having rules is if someone can pull you up from them. So I don't know where this will sit. I mean, there are quite strict rules in the States. And I think, to be fair to Hodinkee, they actually went on and said that they hadn't been paid for the AP coverage. But I think Hodinkee's and others' attitude is more that they don't tend to report on stuff they don't like, which is why what you see on their website always tends to be reasonably positive. They'll not go on and say this is just terrible, which is probably what they should have done with the AP launch. But it will be interesting to see how it affects everybody, because it's, you know, rules and regulations are definitely coming to what is currently quite a Wild West zone of podcasts and websites.
I would say it's more Instagram, and it's definitely more YouTube, and I would say the problems are sitting over in the States. There's only a few people in the UK that are doing watch related podcasts and watch related video, and
yes,
quickly running through them in my brain, not many of them, if any, have been pushing crap products that we know fine well they're getting paid for. But in the States, the amount of really, really cheap watches that maybe are getting charged out a lot more than they're worth.
Yeah.
And then suddenly they appear on every YouTube channel that's to do with watches.
Yes.
At the one time. It's suckering a lot of people into paying a lot of money for things when they could have got out and got something nicer for that cash. Now, you've got those types of YouTubers, but then on the opposite end of the spectrum, you've got people like Jody, who runs the Just One More Watch channel. Now, we've got a sort of semi-interview, I suppose you could say, or a feature about him on the website talking about, you know, he came across from Scotland, stays in Australia, started a watch channel, and what he covers. But he's been sent watches for review, and he's actually told the truth about it. But I've spotted some reviews of various different micro brands, entry level, lower priced models, and he actually just tells it like it is. He doesn't sugarcoat it. One that sticks out in my mind is a recent review he did of a Dan Henry watch. And Dan Henry is a watch collector that has kind of created a range of homage watches based on things that he likes and things he's got in his collection. And there was this vintage style Porsche design retro looking thing in black that actually did look quite good. It was quite inexpensive, but Jody commented that the coating on it, don't know if it's paint, don't know if it's DLC, PVD, it started to come off the bracelet. And he was open and honest, told the viewers about it, showed them it, and then moved on. Whereas I've seen reviews of the same watch from other people on YouTube that people put a lot of faith, a lot of trust in, and they haven't mentioned any of this at all. They have just breezed over the top of it. And the chances are it's because they've been given a free watch, free watches, or they've been paid. So well done to Jody, and a shame on you to those YouTubers lining their pockets and ripping off the public.
And hopefully what you'll see on our website as we build will be some reasonably balanced reviews. You know, we don't think it's necessarily appropriate to slag someone off who's put in a lot of effort to producing a product, but hopefully if we get to test it or see it, we'll give you an opinion. It's up to you whether you choose to put any weight in that opinion, but it will definitely be our opinion. It will not be influenced by what anyone's told us or said to us or tried to flog us stuff with.
Mm-hmm. Well, you've had a quick sneaky peek of my Omega Speedmaster review, and it was quite fairly balanced.
Yes,
I'd say, the way I took pot shots at things.
Yep, I think so, considering that you paid for it yourself and weren't actually given the watch.
Nope. No discounts either.
No discounts.
God damn it.
So that is the main bit of news coming out of the UK in terms of watch potentially related stuff, is just how the media regulators are starting to look at the online world and starting to say, wait a minute here, you're not quite playing with straight bat. You need to fess up when you are being paid for stuff and not just look like you're using it out of your own desire and goodwill. So yeah, we'll see how that proceeds. So one of the things we are going to look at a bit today is some of the articles. The website's basically been up for around a month. We've been doing this for about a month, so we thought it would be a good catch-up to look at some of the articles that have been put out, maybe relate them to some current news stuff that's going on, and just give you a chance to go and have a look at yourself. And one of the articles which went out just a couple of days ago was about potentially the sound of watch bubbles bursting. And I have seen, since that article went out, another couple of YouTube posts which have been suggesting that some of these astronomical grey market and used market prices are starting to come down. But you've got a bit of a take on this yourself, Ricky, from this week, to do with Tudor.
Yeah, it was a couple of things that happened. One was after we met in Glasgow and did the interview with Simon down at Porter's, I took a wander around, ended up in Watches of Switzerland in Buchanan Street.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a place I usually go into, so I wandered in, said hello, they don't know me, chatted to the guy, he was busy telling me about what's in, what's hot, what's not, and he was talking about Tudor, and I said, well, you know, do you have any of the models in that people are after, like the GMT? And he went, yeah, we've got a couple in.
Really?
I think that's what he said, and I said to him, okay, let's have a look at it then.
Uh-huh.
And he went away and got one and produced it and said, there it is. And I thought, hold on a minute, people are like waiting for this.
Yes.
So I said, well, is it for sale? Is it for somebody? Yeah, it's for sale. If you want it, you can have it today. So it was just retail price. It came in its little Rolex Tudor coffin.
Uh-huh.
And I could have walked out the door, having just spent 5 minutes in the place. So waiting list for the GMT. and should have won, obviously, but seemed to be non-existent. The secondary market price for them, having spoken to a few people that deal with them on the secondary market, they've said that it has sharply dropped. So I don't know if it's a case of a lot of people were continuously asking for it, suddenly supply caught up with demand, and it's now flooded.
Uh-huh.
And then there's a watch channel called Federico Talks Watches.
Yeah.
And the guy that runs that, he says he's been in the industry for a long time, worked for various brands, and now he runs a second-hand dealership called Delray Watch. He was actually producing a video there that said the same thing. Various different brands that originally were hot maybe a year ago, 6 months ago, a couple of months ago, are now getting soft, and there is just too much on the market and less demand for it, including the Jubilee Rolex GMT Master 2 Pepsi, which was the biggest, hottest potato of last year.
Mm-hmm.
It started on the secondary market, I think he was saying around about $24,000, dropped to $20,000, dropped to $18,000, and now it's almost around about the $16,000 mark.
Yeah, I did a bit of research about this. I've been trying to put together a wee equation to kind of monitor both the grey market and the hot used market. And certainly, I mean, the Tudor, you can walk into an AD if you can find one, which they are about. I think the retail's £2,790. But these things are sitting on grey market, which is basically means they're brand new, box and paper, still with the stickers on them, at an average of just over £3,600. So some people are still managing to spend close to a grand more on a watch that if they just phoned around a few ADs, they'd probably be able to get one. And on the used market, obviously there's not a lot of these used. So they're less than a year old. It's only a couple hundred quid off that. About 3,400 people are advertising them at that. Now, whether they actually ever achieve those prices is not entirely clear. But certainly the Tudor now appears to be catching up the demand with the supply. My reflection, and the same is true of the BLNR, the GMT Pepsi, the Hulk. And then when you get into the more exotic stuff like the 5711s, etc., and some of the APs, it looks to me like these prices are slowly ticking down, but whether that's just a pre-Basel thing, people are now holding out for what's going to come in some of the Basel launch brands, remains to be seen.
You also got to remember, we're just after Christmas and New Year, and a lot of people are looking at their finances and saying, credit card payment time. So it's lots of different factors. Fuel costs, heating costs at this time of year go up, maybe not as much free cash kicking about, and people have slowed down slightly. So on the back of that kind of downbeat news, there was some news from LVMH Group, which is Zenith, Hublot, TAG, and things were a little bit more upbeat with them.
Yes, they have brought in their full year results. Now, LVMH is not just watches, but it's all sorts of other things. There's the alcohol, wines and spirits side, fashions, perfume, but watches and jewellery is obviously the bit we're concerned with. Overall, their revenue is now a whopping 46.8 billion euros, and they have grown roughly 11%. These tiny articles and figures tend to be split down between organic growth and growth done by buying other things, etc. But they have had a good time in 2017-18, watches up sort of in the region of 12%. So, yeah, something's going right at LVMH. Now, whether that is actually to do with the brands, I mean, Bulgari has had a cracking last 24 months in terms of new product. TAG maybe gives me the impression that it's starting to turn the corner. So I suspect the figures in this maybe don't owe a lot to TAG. The increase, I think it's probably been quite static, would be my guess.
Well, Zenith's also starting to get a little bit more out there. They did a crappy time of it, and they've just been hitting home runs lately.
I think so. I think there'll be some Zenith plus points in these figures. I think TAG will probably have a big input in the next financial year because they're starting to produce some actual, some crap. These Tourbillon watches will... Okay, folk are not going to go out in their droves and buy them, but it will lead to people looking at other parts of the brand and bring them back some, hopefully, increased credibility that they seem to have been struggling with recently. And Hublot is always a bit of a mystery to me. It always does really well. It's a very specific sector. I actually quite like some of the new stuff, some of the spirit of Big Bang. I probably would never buy one, although the really simple three-handers in the kind of blues and greens are quite nice. But they've obviously spent a shed load of money on the World Cup, and some of that sales growth will be in these figures, I would think. So yeah, they've had a good year, but they've actually got four brands that have been performing quite well. And in Bulgari, one that's probably been performing better than most in the last year. So there is some positive vibes. I don't think any of their brands or any of the watches within their brands have a particular grey market appeal. I don't think people are buying these and then flipping them. I think
which ones
all
are you talking
these,
about there? Bulgari?
Bulgari Tag, I mean, there might be some of the rarer pieces, but I don't think anyone's buying these and then making money. I think people are buying them and holding them.
Yeah, especially in the last couple of years, because Bulgari's kind of come from nowhere and have released the world's thinnest movement of X-Type, if it's mechanical, if it's automatic. Their Octofinissimo range is stunning.
Is.
They've brought out all kinds of skeletonized versions. They've won awards. And like a couple of years ago, nobody really talked to them. And just what you said about Tag. Tag was a brand people that were younger aspired to, I suppose.
Yeah.
And then they kind of really dipped. I don't know if it was quality or just, you know, people move on. You know, people like this brand and then they move to that brand. Yeah. A few years ago, it was Ed Hardy and Von Dutch and who knows what it is nowadays. Uh-huh. So, yeah, it could be that. But Tiger coming back, the Gyro Tourbillon, the nanotech thing that we previewed on the website, stunning.
Yes.
Really, really nice. I have had a Tourbillon out for a while that was the cheapest one in sort of the Swiss watch space, which really annoyed Patek.
Yes.
But, yeah, some of the more recent stuff, I can actually see myself thinking I could possibly go and buy a Tag.
Yeah.
Whereas maybe a year or two ago, I had no interest in the brand.
Have you ever tried on one of the Octofinissimos, the Bulgaris?
I have indeed.
I've seen one, but I've never tried one on. I saw one at Heathrow Airport, but I've never tried one on. Mm-hmm. Are they nice?
Yes. The thing that put me off, and it was the only part of it, is the way that the bezel into the dial is built up. There's all these different layers.
Yes.
And there's a part of it that's kind of, I don't know if it's octagonal, but it just looks a little bit wrong. It reminds me of a lens on a camera that's broken.
Oh, right. Okay, I know what you mean.
Yes, it's kind of half apertures open, half closed, and that's the only thing that put me off. It just looked unfinished. Apart from that, great. The bracelet is stunning on it. And the one I tried on, it was over in one of the boutiques in Paris. It was a sunburst metallic blue dial.
Uh-huh.
Gorgeous. I'll try and dig a photo out and stick it in the show notes. It was brilliant. It's a brand that I'd never really paid attention to. And then about a year, year and a half ago, I saw them and thought, wow, these guys are actually going to be going places.
And LVMH, if Rolex ever does genuinely come up, not Rolex, sorry, Patek genuinely does come up for sale, are one of the groups that has the financial muscle to buy them. They are effectively the largest that has a major amount of watch brands already in its luxury portfolio. So you never know. Patek could be being added to Bulgari, Tag, Zenith and Hublot. And you know what? It might sit quite well in amongst that lot. It might do.
Mm.
So there we go. So that was news from of a more positive kind from LVMH. It will be interesting to see what the 2018-19 figures are like, whether they take a big dip. But Tag will have a good year. Zenith might have a very good year. So that might drag their figures up and keep them lively for reporting this time.
I think this year is going to be good all round. I mean, we touched on a couple of episodes ago. It's the 50th anniversary of everything.
Yeah.
Quartz,
yes.
Moon landings, El Primero movements. It's a home run and hat trick at the moment for the watch industry. That will hopefully increase spend with collectors like ourselves or enthusiasts like ourselves. And also the advertising, the news articles that are drip feeding. I'm starting to see news articles appearing on /dot tech blogs and journals and things, whereas maybe in the past they wouldn't have. So new eyeballs are going to start to see this stuff.
Yes.
And if it looks good and it entices people in, it can only be a good thing for the hobby.
Yeah, absolutely. Cool. So that maybe leads us into one of the other articles from the website, which was talking about another anniversary that's happened this year that anybody listening may want to go and run their eyeballs over, because as well as the anniversary of all these movements, it's also the 50th anniversary of the production and going into service of Concorde. And as if two were not, as if, you know, one celebration watch wasn't enough, there a second one has just turned up in the last week from Christopher Ward. And interestingly, it means that Christopher Ward and Bremont, I think, who would be the two biggest British watch brands. I'm not sure. There might be some other ones in there, but I think they would be the two that would immediately spring to mind to me if somebody said, name me some British watch brands, would be the two biggest, are now notionally going head-to-head over the same celebration. So it will be interesting to see how that plays out. The Bremen is, they're both lovely watches. Bremen is not as limited edition as the Christopher Ward. The Christopher Ward is its own movement. You met Christopher Ward. Did you speak about his movement production at all?
I did briefly. It's included in the short interview clip that's included two episodes ago, I believe.
Okay.
He said it was about 5 or 6 years ago they brought to market their own designed in-house movement instead of getting an ETA and changing the rotor on it and pretending it's yours.
Yes.
Or, as TAG may have done in the past, getting a Seiko design and stamping TAG on it and saying it's theirs.
So as far as I'm aware, it's the only fully UK watch movement from the ground up.
Yep.
I think there's,
that's what they've said.
I think there might be a bit of a dispute in that because they got a company to start making it and then bought the company, so it's now all Christopher Ward or merged with the company. But it certainly is their own in-house calibre. Whether you classify it as British or not, it's definitely theirs. Mm-hmm. The Bremen's not quite so straightforward. It is their first manual wound calibre, but it's not their own. But it's a lovely watch, but I've got a Bremen, I've also got a Christopher Ward. The Bremen, though, I think is just a smidgen OTT in the finance stakes for what it is. Lovely though it is. I think if it was between the two of them, I'd probably go for the Christopher Ward.
Here's the thing. Bremen have pushed the price up on their watches, and a few people have said, what are they playing at? But are they selling? That's the thing. If they can get away with it, if the market will hold that price, if people are willing to spend the money on a nicely designed British watch that has suddenly jumped up, if they're still willing to spend the money, then well done to them.
Absolutely.
I suppose it's like Patek saying the 5711, it hasn't really changed since 2012, but hey guys, you want to pay an extra 20% for
absolutely.
Nothing? Sure, go ahead.
No, you absolutely cannot blame them for trying to get as much money out of it as they can. They've got investors and bills to pay. So I wouldn't, I can't criticise them for trying to make money, but I think it does. I wouldn't buy it, so it pushes me out of buying one. But that's true. But I'm sure there's plenty of other people that will buy them. They made 300 in steel. As far as I'm aware, they're all gone. Certainly, they're all away from Bremen. I think there might be some still lurking around in some ADs somewhere in the world, but I think they're quite tricky to come hold of. And I suspect after an initial dive in value, give it 10 years, you'll probably be sitting with something that's worth the same amount of money as you paid for it, if not maybe a smidgen more. It'll be interesting to see how the English brothers manage over the next few years, but if they continue the way they're going, then I think they'll have created a brand which has some sustainability, some value, some history to it that people will invest in. So that's that.
So are we going to just do a quick run through of bits and pieces that are on the website for folks that maybe haven't been on and had a look around?
Yes, so we've touched on two articles already. One is about the potential bubble bursting for some of these high-priced grey and used market watches such as the Daytonas, the Tudors, etc. And the other is a Christopher Ward stroke Bremen article about the celebration of Concorde. What other articles would you like to touch on, Ricky?
We've obviously said a few times in the podcast, what we're trying to do here is give a base and a home for enthusiasts across Scotland who are interested in this lovely hobby. And we've had a few people come back to us and say they like what we're talking about and they want to help and contribute. So we've got an article online, I think it's the first one from a contributor. It's from the TikTok Collector on Instagram. His name's Logan, based over in Edinburgh. And I think it was about a month ago, he put a photograph up of his watch and accessories and strap collection on Instagram. Did you see that?
I did see that. I messaged him about it because he was trying to get all of his watch and strap collection into one picture, but couldn't get his phone that he was using or his camera that he was using high enough up in the air. He was hitting the ceiling or didn't have a wide enough angle to get it in. It's just a collection of loads and loads of vintage some really nice stuff that you'll never seen of, never have heard of the brand. He has subsequently tried, I believe, to get a loom shot of it all, but has thus far failed miserably in terms of getting everything lit properly, so I look forward to seeing that at some stage.
Yeah, you would need a floodlight to light all that stuff up. It actually reminded me of the photograph that we're talking about on Instagram. We'll stick it in the show notes. It reminded me of watching Record Breakers when I was a kid, and they had like a domino challenge, and you couldn't see the ground or the floor because it was just lines of dominoes. That's what all his straps on the floor looked like.
Yes.
But the article's a great one. It's titled "The Joys and Woes of a Beginner Vintage Collector." It's about a 5-minute read, and he's taken some amazing photographs. He's obviously got some good skills, both writing Absolutely. And in the photography department. So go and check that one out. It takes you through how he got into the hobby, where he spends his time on eBay looking for things, and he highlights some movements and some manufacturers that I'd never heard of that have obviously come and gone. But there was a couple of things in there that you liked to look of, wasn't
yeah,
there?
Yeah, one in particular, which if Rolex are listening, they should go and check out, is his picture of a watch called a Darwell, which is right. a kind of white and burgundy half and half dive bezel, which just, I think, looks stunning. I'm going to get him next time I see him to bring this along so as I can have a try of it on. It looks epic. The colours are just brilliant, the white and the burgundy. Yep, love it.
Another guy that's looking to contribute is Declan. He has been mentioned many times on the podcast.
Yep, yep.
Good friend to both of us, very helpful fellow. Works down Nergal Arcade and mm-hmm. came across to our Geneva Day to Switzerland, to SIHH. He is doing a review, and it should almost be done by now, on his Bremont.
Yes, he...
This is a watch he picked up quite recently, and he's not stopped talking about it, so we said, can you just shut up for 5 minutes and maybe write something for us?
Yeah, he spent a lot of time agonising over what watch to buy. There was certainly a few that were in his sphere of possibilities, and he eventually settled on the Bremont. I think he traded in a Seamaster.
I think he sold that one.
He sold that one on Seamaster. So he sold his Seamaster. He got a good deal from his great employers, presumably at Chisholm and Hunter in the arcade. And bought this Bremont. It looks lovely. The straps in these things are absolutely epic. They're so well made, thick and comfy. So yeah, actually looking forward to seeing that article and seeing his watch in the flesh. He'll be a chuffed boy.
The enthusiasm he always has when we're speaking to him or we bump into him, it will translate to the written word. So yeah, definitely check that one out. We've also got a few little articles that you can sort of look at in your lunch break or when you're buggering off to the toilet to look at memes on your phone. We've got one about a photograph that I actually took a couple of weeks ago of my Speedmaster.
Yes, I like this.
It was the new shiny. And whenever something's new shiny, it's like if you get a new car, you're always taking photographs of it. New watch, you're always doing wrist shots. So I thought, I'll take some photos of this. And basically, I came up with the idea of taking a photo of my watch, which is a Dark Side of the Moon edition, on the Dark Side of the Moon looking back to Earth. Uploaded it to one of the horology groups on Facebook, and it got entered in a photo contest that they run every month.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah, and it won.
Oh, did it? So, I didn't know that. Yeah. What'd you win?
I won kudos.
The nation is grateful to your photo.
So, anyway, uploaded this photo, and a lot of people really liked it. It ended up in the competition.
Cool.
The way it goes is, you know, it's people like the photo that they obviously like the best on the comments, and then it goes into quarterfinals, semifinals, finals, winner is chosen. Gratefully, mine actually came out on top, but in the comments, a couple of people commented and said that photo shouldn't be involved in this because it's obviously just been photoshopped and composited together. So I didn't want to go in and go bananas at folks, but I thought, well, I'll just say no, it isn't. And after the contest is done, I'll explain how it was put together.
Uh-huh.
So contest was completed, and I actually won the contest in December as well. But less said about that, better.
I'm just looking at the article here, and yes, it says, "Congrats, Ricky, for winning the first photo contest of 2019, his second overall." So you've got a bit of a reputation on this horology talk site, but looks
yeah.
of it.
That's two for two, December and January.
Oh, right,
so we'll
okay.
see how February comes along. But so a couple of people were saying it's a fake image. And one guy said, it's obviously faked because you don't get any lume on the crown of Omega watches.
Oh, right, okay. Which you promptly proved him wrong.
I sent him a link to the Omega website, which proved him wrong.
Right,
but
okay.
So I saw that and I thought, right, okay, I'm going to explain how this is done. So I went stage by stage through how the image was put together. The main part of it was getting a photo of the moon and putting it on my computer screen. then putting the watch in front of the computer screen. But the tricky part was making the watch look as if it's sitting on the moon's surface with craters and all the rest of it. The way I did that was very low tech. It was like watching a sci-fi series or a film from the 80s or 90s. It was all practical effects. It wasn't computer CGI or anything like that. So what I did was I got a mirror, sprayed it with fairy liquid from a squeezy bottle, let it dry, so it was a kind of grey, crispy, whitey mess. Then I put the watch on it, so the reflection of the moon in the screen through the mirror, under the watch, and then took a photo and put it online.
Yeah, I'm scrolling through this. I still don't understand how that works, but it does look very cool.
Which bit?
The whole mirror, putting it on a mirror, and it picking... So is it actually the... Is what I'm seeing is the craters... the dabbing on the mirror, or is it the reflection of the craters on the computer screen reflected in the mirror?
It's a mixture.
A bit of both,
two.
Right, okay.
It's to give a little bit of depth. So I'm really chuffed with that. The best part, the bit I liked the most out of it was in the domed sapphire of the watch, you can actually see the earth reflected.
Yes, we can. Cool.
That was the point I went for. So really chuffed about that. If you want to see behind the scenes how a photograph is put together. And if anyone's interested, I was actually thinking of maybe doing a couple of photography-related posts about, you know, the best way to use your mobile phone, if you're out, best lighting to use, artificial, natural, and then moving on if you want, if you've got a DSLR and you're looking to do a little bit of watch photography. And I'm going to rope a few people into this because... on Instagram, I've got a lot of contacts, not contacts, people that I follow, that I chat with, who are phenomenal at this kind of thing. A guy called Watch Spirit, you've got the Watch Dude 2, you've got Epic Watch Photos. There are loads of these guys, and I've already messaged a few of them just to say, listen, love your stuff, because not enough people give compliments when people do good work.
Yeah.
So I like to just touch base and say, keep doing it, because I want to see their photos. I want to see, every time I go on Instagram, great images that inspire me to go and try and take a better image myself. So I'm going to do that.
Cool.
And speaking of the Watch Dude 2, I hear that the Red Bar events are going to be kicking off 2019 quite shortly.
Yes, I have seen some posts on the Watch Dude saying that invitations should be winging their way to those that are registered with at Red Bar Glasgow and at Red Bar Edinburgh any minute now. So I look forward to that.
Good.
I'm not sure whether that's presumably going to be February rather than March. I assume it'll be quite, because they don't tend to give a lot of notice in these things.
Yeah, it should be this month.
So I have only ever been to one event.
Really?
Yeah, only been to the one, which was where I got the Seiko.
It wasn't
a Casio. It was a Seiko event, and they got a Casio, which incidentally, because we've not done this, is what I'm actually wearing just now. I don't think we've done a wrist check, have we?
Did we get this far in an episode?
I think we did.
Hold on a minute. No, hold on a minute. Really? You're wearing what?
I think so. I'm wearing my G-Shock. I'm giving it some extended wrist presence, seeing as my Tissot is in for a service.
We're G-Shock buddies today.
Oh, is that right? The way it should be.
Yes.
Back to the beginning, where it all started.
Like one of those.
Oh, have you busted it up? Have you?
Well, it's a G-Shock. You can't really bust it up.
Okay, fair enough.
But what happened was, it came up and it said low, and I thought, okay then.
Oh no! I know what you did. Right, okay. Go on.
What did I do?
Go on.
Right, okay. It's not going to be as funny as probably what you think.
All right, okay.
So I thought, what's the best way of doing this? Because if I put it behind the window, it's obviously it's going to block some of the energy, the UV rays with the glass. So I'll leave it outside.
So I went
outside and I got a bucket, empty bucket, turned it upside down, plonked the watch on it, left it in my garden, hoped that no magpies were going to come and get themselves a nice new G-Shock. But didn't bank on the fact that it was going to be a windy night. Bucket ended up at the other side of the garden.
Right, okay.
Watch ended up scratched, rolling about on the patio.
Oh dear, nightmare. So I thought what you were going to say was that you had taken one of those big photo flash screen things you've got for taking great big photos and like shone the equivalent of a floodlight at the thing at about, you know, 4 inches away from it and melted it or something, or overcharged it and it was now sparking. But no, that actual story is much worse.
There we go. And I'm looking at it, and because it's one mark right in the bezel, and I'm thinking,
oh dear,
I'm quite good at fixing things like this, but I could really go to town and make an arse of it. So
just while you're at it, just wipe off the word protection and G-Shock at the bottom while you scrape it all out.
I like that. I like that. That's the best part. The way the light catches that when you're doing wrist shots outside is great.
Yeah. No, so, I like it. Yeah, it's a nice watch.
It took a little bit of a dink. It's strange because I think you're of the same mindset as me with it. It's a G-Shock. Mm-hmm. It's digital.
Yeah.
But when you've got it in your wrist and you're not looking at it, you're not looking at the top of it, it feels like an automatic or a mechanical.
Yeah. I've actually found it wearing it for an extended period. It's not a flaw as such. I think it's just something you get used to. I know this sounds daft for a digital watch, in that it's actually quite difficult to read, in that I think it's probably just because I'm short-sighted or long-sighted or whatever it is, and I probably need varifocals now, old man glasses, is that unlike a mechanical watch where you don't need, you know, you can just flick your wrist and get an impression of what the time is, because normally it's not about reading the exact time, it's just about knowing, you know, is it coming at 5 o'clock, is it just past 4 o'clock, what happens to be. Whereas this,
have you seen my Speedmaster?
Whereas this, you actually need to, yes, that's true, yes. Your Speedmaster probably needs interpretation. The gift of knowledge applied to the Speedmaster. So I've just found the G-Shock slightly more difficult to read than I expected. I don't know whether the reverse, because I've got the dial whereby the numbers are in the LCD, but you also get the reverse ones whereby it's the lack of LCD that is the number.
What you're really meaning to say is that the numbers are black.
That's the one. Yeah, that would have been the easier way to explain. I'm going back to that timing device. I'm just going to time myself. Yeah. And
That reminds me of that phrasing that, what is it? It goes something like, why use a big word when a diminutive one will suffice?
I'm going to use that elsewhere and give you no credit for it and pretend it was all my own.
Sounds like life.
Sounds like everything else you do that I take credit for.
Indeed. Well, I do take credit for your articles.
That's
which is
true.
Quite
that's
funny.
True, though. Now that my spelling's better, that's slightly more offensive. There you go.
I just let you think. No, I've just not reported your errors. I just fixed them for you.
Okay. Good stuff.
There is a difference. But loving the G-Shock. I still wear it a lot. Yeah, this has replaced the Speedmaster for the last couple of days.
Cool.
Speedy's taking a break because it's illegible. But yeah, good fun.
Yeah, what is it about buying watches that it turns out, yes, you can't read? You should still go and buy like a Mickey Mouse Swatch watch type thing. Them you can read.
Well, I mean, who is it that keeps buying these Hublots?
Not me, not guilty.
So that's just a few of the articles that we've got on the website, and there's a few things coming up. We're always working on bits and pieces behind the scenes. Sometimes the day jobs do get in the road, which is unfortunate, and I've been harping on about doing some stuff with my new Speedy for 2 weeks, and I haven't got around to it, but it is written. Rick has proofed it, checked it, I've got some photos for it, so that will be online, I promise, by the time you hear this. But again, we're looking for people to contribute, help out if you've got an interest, a passion. It might be a quirky watch, it might be how you got into the hobby, it might be your plans, your inspirations, your aspirations. Get in touch with us, drop us a DM on Instagram at Scottish Watches. Go to the website, www.scottishwatches.co.uk, click the contact button and just drop us a message. We will pretty much put anything online. If you need a hand, if you're not 100% sure about writing style or bits and bobs, we can help you out because I have to fix everything that Rick puts online.
This regrettably is actually true. He's made me install that grammar thing just because my grammar's so
you've actually installed bad. That
I have installed it. The problem is it's now correcting everything, and I can't find a version that doesn't let you have a U in things like colour and all this kind of stuff. I don't know if there's a UK English one.
You go to the settings and change your language from US okay. to UK.
I'm not that technical, you need to come and show me how it's done.
I thought you were like the technical wizard at the place you work.
Oh, I am, yeah, absolutely, but that just shows you how like bad everybody else is. When they have to come to me for advice. But there we go.
So they still use things like phone books and yellow pages, do they?
Listen, let me tell you, I was in our storage cupboard the other day and found the Telex machine. There you go. For anyone out there that remembers what a Telex machine is, if you don't know what a Telex machine is, go and Google it and then just wonder. It's basically like a typewriter version of an email, sort of.
I think I saw that in the Robin Williams film, Good Morning Vietnam, where the news comes in on teletype.
That was a teletyper. I think a telex machine was even worse and slower.
Wow.
But yes. So yeah, we still have that in our office for the
good.
When the revolution comes.
So what have we got coming up?
Well, interestingly, on the back of all the talk about used, pre-loved grey market watches, we have an interview that you have done with Jonathan at the Edinburgh Watch Company, who will give us some insight into what is actually happening from a guy on the ground who is dealing in pre-loved watches. So I'm looking forward to hearing that, because I didn't get the chance to meet Jonathan, although I've met him a couple of times at some of the shows that he goes to in and around Scotland. And we should confess now that Jonathan, although I've not seen it, so technically I don't need to say that I got free stuff, you've actually just got two baseball caps from them. I haven't actually received mine yet, so currently I am uninfluenced to say nice things about him, whereas you are under the influence of at least two baseball caps from Jonathan. But anyway, that's coming up next week, your interview with him, and you are also getting ready to sit down, and hopefully we'll both sit down with this person to interview with regards to Red Bar.
Yes, I have been speaking to the coordinator of Red Bar London. He also helped oversee and create the Red Bar events up here in Scotland, Dave Sharp. And this is going to be interesting. We've not recorded it yet, and it's a really strange one. It turns out, in a past life, when I was running a car magazine, I did an interview with this guy 15 years ago, right? So I'm speaking to him. I got his phone number on Instagram. Didn't recognise the name because it's his Sunday name of David, not Dave. Got his number, phoned him, was on the phone, maybe midnight, running through some ideas, and it just clicked in my brain. Hold on a minute. There's a lot of things here that are quite similar to something I remember, and I just asked him, and they admitted it. I don't know if he already knew, I don't know if he was testing the water, but it turns out, yep, we knew each other in a previous life, we were both involved in cars, and it turns out me and him had a short, high-speed challenge, shall we say, 15 years ago.
But by challenge, so, you mean street race?
I cannot confirm or deny. What's the statute of limitations and these kind of things? Looking forward to sitting down with him and having a really good chat about things. He is an Omega Speedmaster savant. He knows everything about them. He's got a fantastic collection. Can't wait to talk to him about those, talk to him about Red Bar, where it's came from, how it's gaining traction in the UK and obviously up here in Scotland, and to get some insights of obviously what he knows about the industry and where things are going. So that is going to be an absolute cracker.
Yeah, I think he's also very knowledgeable on Seiko and Zenith as well, I believe. So yeah, it'll be interesting to hear from him in a couple of podcast time. So yes, looking forward to that.
So that finishes everything off. Thanks very much, guys, for having a listen to this edition of the podcast. Be sure to subscribe, like, and if you can and you like what you hear, drop us a wee review. We're on Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple iTunes Podcasts, and we're hopefully going to be on YouTube shortly as well. We just need to figure out how to create the channel and upload the audio with some visuals on top. Show notes should be online by the time you have a listen to this, and that is pretty much us for this week.
Cool. So thank you again for listening. It's goodbye from me.
And it's goodbye from him.
Goodbye. No.